All right, welcome everyone to our John Adams Academy board meeting today. We'll open the session by a roll call. See who's here.
Dean Foreman. Dean Foreman.
Here.
Roy Bratz.
Here.
Aaron McCoy.
Here.
Kevin Brandon. Gene Pagnoni, both absent.
Okay, so we do have quorum.
We do.
And this time, is there anyone from the audience that would like to address the board for up to 2 minutes on something not on the agenda? No one here in Roseville. I don't see anyone in Lincoln. And El Dorado, it looks like they're empty too.
That's not great. Is that you all
found? Okay. All right. Thank you. Then the board will go ahead and move into closed session. And we'll come back out at 5 p.m. to open back up the open session and report out. Welcome everyone to our meeting. The report out of closed session is there was no action taken. We'll go ahead and call the meeting to order then and begin with the pledge. I'll please rise to the pledge. Salute. Pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the United States of America.
Okay, we had already did roll call in the prior session. Nothing has changed that way. We'll go ahead with the public comment. Is there anyone that is in the audience who would like to address the board for up to 2 minutes on something that is not on the agenda? I have one card here. How about in Lincoln or El Dorado Hills? Is there anyone there that would like to address the board? No, we'll go ahead and bring up Destiny or Wave. Did I say that right? Did I say your name? Okay. How do you say it again? Adam Wave. Nice. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Destiny Hanaleo. Today I will be presenting This Land Is Yours. Please do this land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the moon of God. From the forest to the Gucci water. This land was made for you and me. As I was walking, the moon is gone, the river forest, and the glitching water. For me, I kind of feel
the best to keep you moving back.
I saw below me, back in the skyway. I saw below me, that golden fountain. This man is for you.
For those who don't know me, I'm Tammy Scott, and I'm for the Expanded Learning Opportunities Program. And Destiny is one of our scholars that comes to our after-school program in Lincoln. And not only is she a fantastic vocalist, but she is a fantastic artist. And Destiny, along with 21 of our other scholars in Lincoln, entered in an art contest, and she is now a published artist. And our name is now in the book under John Adams Academy Lincoln Foundation's Expanded Learning here in California. And so our name is published in this book. And Destiny, out of all of the entries in this entire book, Destiny had the best artist, was the best artist, is now on the cover. With three sets of books that you get to take home to your family. And they also want to make sure that you keep drawing and coloring, and there's a whole bunch of art supplies here. And these are for you. You're welcome.
Destiny, well done.
Yeah.
I like how you hit those notes too. So, nice. Way to go.
Thank you, Mom.
Right, we'll continue with the thought of the day.
Okay, I have to follow destiny. All right, that's rough. I was thinking, you know, I can't, I tried to look and see where I found it. I transferred this, I think it was a blog post, exactly sure who wrote this. I think it might be Seth Godin, if anybody knows who that is. But anyway, it was along the lines, it went along the lines of what I was thinking about is just argumentation. I think we've lost the art of arguing in a positive sense, that we can't, at least in the businesses that I've been involved in and some number of organizations in the past, very little gets done if you can't have a, you know, real frank open conversation back and forth without, you know, hurt feelings and maybe even with hurt feelings. And this blog post was kind of along those lines. It, not exactly, but it got me thinking about that concept of, you know, how do we make good decisions? How do we come to good decisions? And the headline here was, how do you win an argument with a toddler? And the next sentence is, you can't. That's because toddlers don't understand what an argument is and aren't interested in having one. Toddlers, which include defensive bureaucrats, bullies, flat earthers, may indicate that they'd like to have an argument, but they're actually engaging in connection, noise, play acting, or a chance to earn status. It can be fun to be in opposition, even to use power to change someone's position. An argument, though, is an exchange of ideas that off-the-surface insight and lead to a conclusion. If you're regularly having arguments with well-informed people of goodwill, you will probably lose half of them, changing your mind based on what you learn. If you're not changing your mind, it's likely you're not actually having an argument, or you're having an argument with the wrong people. While it can be fun to change someone else's position, it's also a gift to learn enough to change ours. The toddler puts on a show of having an argument, but they are holding a tantrum in reserve. If they win the argument, no tantrum is needed. If they lose, they can tell themselves that they tried, but the other person deserve the tantrum because they didn't listen. Tell me about other strongly held positions you have changed as a result of a discussion like this one. Is a direct way to start a conversation about the argument you're proposing to have. What sort of information would make it likely you could see this in a different way? Another good way to approach it. It probably doesn't pay to argue over things we have chosen to believe as part of our identity. Anyway, I'm not putting in very good words how this connects with some of my other thoughts, other than to say we've lost the art of maybe argument. It's not even the right word, but it was the word that was used in that post. So I kind of latched onto that word, and I wonder if it's not true. I think back to some of the better decisions that I've been able to make in my life personally or organizationally or whatever the case may be. And most often it's done in, I guess, what I would consider a council type of situation where everybody's coming together and counseling together to try to make a good decision, but they're not afraid of offending, you know, not that we're out to offend people, but it's kind of hard to have an argument to hold differing differing opinions on how something should be done without some offense, you know, potentially taking place. I guess I could talk about offense too. I mean, you have to take offense, right? I mean, we even use that in our verbiage. You know, somebody took offense, or I take offense to that. I mean, can somebody really offend you, or do you have to take offense? So I'm not sure what the solution is. I think my thought for the day is just is maybe just to be aware of if you're not, I think the thing I like most of that is if you're not finding yourself changing your own opinion about things, I'm not talking about, is there a God? You know, it isn't at that level. I'm talking about our day-to-day business decisions, how we conduct business in the school, is what I was thinking about. If you're not finding yourself changing your opinion on how to do things now and again, if you don't have a strongly held belief about how something should be done here at the school, and you're not changing that now and again, then you're not having productive conversations, or you're having conversations with the wrong people. And that's my thought.
Thank you. Love that. It was right along with the model. Appreciate the elevation of the thought of awareness and ability to see the other side, see first, understand, and then to be understood, maybe. I like it. Next is board announcements. Any board announcements that the board would like to or mention? One thing I would say is please, as we get towards the end of the year, please dust off the prompt that I have suggested every year. How has John Adams Academy changed the name of the year? And it's a reflection prompt. It's a prompt to get them to think about why they're here, and that hopefully that if it's changed them for the better, they're in the right place. It's kind of the opposite, and maybe the way to present it is, how many of you want to change John Adams Academy, or John Adams Academy changing me? And that's the idea, is that as we engage these classics and things under the umbrella of the Academy, it changes us. And so that's the idea, that's the goal. So please use that prompt as you get to the end of the year. We need more reflection prompts, especially the last day or two, when sometimes we see time that maybe just frittered away on things that you're just trying to get into the last day and then go. And I'm thinking, use those last moments to do something really great. To do something maybe never before done. All right. The PSO updates. I have to say, this was so good. I started writing them down, and I had, before I knew it, I had a full page here. But thank you to our PSO presidents and those that helped them. Everything from field trips to I saw that El Dorado did a sim day, and, you know, short for simulation. And that is part of our model. And to have that be honored so is really a proud moment for me to read about that. I love that. I'm calling out the teachers at each campus, like each PSO is doing. Doing some special for them. That is so good. Getting involved in the plays that are going on. And there's so many good plays that are happening this time of year. And, you know, we have choirs that are performing. And you can't do it with really the precision and the beauty of excellence without the volunteers that bring it to happen. So thank you so much. And for seeing ahead, these PSOs look and try to find what would make things easier for teachers and others in the classroom. Thank you for asking those questions and then funding those opportunities. Uh, Any comments by the board that they wanted to mention about ESO or anything that they noted? Oh, the Raptor software. Thank you for doing software that will track volunteer hours and encourage that, especially when it's driven by the PSO. That's really powerful because, you know, then they're the ones that are taking the stewardship of that. That's really powerful. It's not coming from the board, it's coming from the grassroots. Next is the Scholar Body President Report online. Welcome. Glad you're here.
The video.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for listening in. I want to take a few minutes to share what we have been up to at JA Online and where we're headed. Now, first, on the activity side of things, we organized a laser tag event for April 17th. And it's a simple idea, but the vision is that scholars get out of the comfort zones, get moving around, working together, and experiencing more social interactions. We have also kept our debate program going really strong, and we tackled three pretty meaty topics. One of them was on ice. Another was on vehicle safety, whether tech in vehicles actually makes us safer and such. The last one was on AI and the impact it currently has and possible impact, future impact. What I love about these debates is that scholars aren't simply arguing. They are researching. They're forming opinions. They're pushing back on each other. Respectfully, of course. And I think that is a skill that will serve them long after they leave us. Now, we also had a chance to host a workshop where we dug into the job market and specifically which industries are growing, which ones are paying well, and future that of work that and what it looks like, especially with the age of AI. We talked about where the government investment is playing a role, where versus where the natural market growth is driving things. Scholars left with a much clearer picture of opportunities that are available to them. And I think that's the kind of conversation every young person deserves to have. Now, looking ahead, we are planning stages of what I think is going to be the next highlight of the year, and that's our end of year festival. The idea here is to dedicate a week, possibly two, to a series of competitions and challenges where scholars are able to learn earn points, and then use those points as currency to spend on prizes and a secret prize. It is designed to be very exciting, something to look forward to, something to talk about, and we want to close the year on a high note, and I think this will do the trick. There's a lot of stuff to look forward to. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you to our online program. I noticed how well things are going in so many ways, and it is a reflection of the teachers and the leaders and everybody working together in unity. Well done.
I'm curious if what were the results of their research on the AI job outcomes for looking ahead with these kids.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I'm not sure what research they brought forth during that particular meeting, but Milan Kushner, who's our president that you just heard from, is already gainfully employed in online securities and things like that. He's earned well over 500 credits between John's Academy and colleges, and so he's kind of an expert in that area, and they have some very robust conversations.
How many years have you heard learn to code? You know, you're not gonna have a job if you don't know how to code. And then I think these colleges, I think universities and colleges, they're going to be, they're not even reacting yet. You know, they still have huge computer science divisions, but they're not changing classes. They're not doing, you know, they're going to be behind the curve big time, I would think.
Yeah.
I don't think you can stop waving the learn to code flag, because That's being done by AI.
Learn to run AI to write your code, right?
Yeah, it's asking the right questions.
Learn yes. how to get AI to write code.
So true.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you again for participating in this scholar body report. And thank the scholar for his report. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. I'll relay that. He missed being here tonight with the date change. He and his the vice president were also out of town, so we decided that approach would work.
Okay. Yeah, how appropriate. Online for online.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, next is the facilities update. You should have received in your packet some projects that need to happen over the next little while. I wanted to make sure that everybody got those. Sometimes our projects may outweigh our budget, but that's part of why we wanted to have those, is to see what we could afford. What I'm uncertain of at this point and would ask, maybe Academica knows the answer to this, but we need to know what is in our project funds and what is in our maintenance funds. If we know those two items, then we would know, maybe some of these things we might be able to afford. But the other part of it is we need to then be able to, hopefully by no later than the next meeting, tell the sites what they can do and ask for them probably to prioritize what's the most urgent of the things that they have listed. I know, for example, I spoke with one school leader and there's a need for, you know, slurry seal the parking lot. And maybe for someone else, it might be maybe some, and we're going to hear one of those today, it's making more classrooms in the building. But whatever it is, we need to know what those priorities are to be able to then bless those or ask questions to find out what we might get the resources to them. Next is leadership updates. Thank you for sending those in to Troy and everyone. Did you want to take a minute now, Troy, and talk about any of those specifically?
I do think all the principals getting your reports in, some really good data, some really good highlights. We appreciate that. A lot has happened this month, for everything from the John F. Gill statue, a gift we received from the foundation in Roseville, and a Hyperion night tour, which he was able to give a recital to every campus and parents and online for an evening event. And it was a real treat. There is one item that is in your consent agenda, which I put in my leadership report. We are proposing a transition in our salary contracts, or I should say all contracts, to a transition from issuing evergreen renewals to the more standard and common practice of an annual contract. This is this just allows flexibility. It allows us to be responsible for resources. It basically it means each year, as a teacher meets with their administrator, they will sit down and make a contract for the year, and they'll have the contract for the year. And then the next year, they'll look at it again and do a new contract. So it's different than in the past, but not that much different. Most teachers think we're doing it anyway that way, but it is this common, it is a common practice with educators. And we'd like to make a transition. Again, it's an item in the consent agenda, which could be discussed if you want to bring it up, consent agenda, but I want to discuss. That is it.
Okay, next item is the financial update.
For those who don't know me, my name is Josh Gilbert. I'm the academic accounting manager for California. I'll be presenting this evening on behalf of our for John Adams Academy, year-to-date revenue through March 2026 totaled $51.5 million, while expenses totaled $54.2 million. This is resulting in a year-to-date deficit of approximately $2.7 million. At the campus level, the sites remain on track with approximately 73 to 78% of their annual budgets spent. This is in line with expectations for this. In addition, ANS expenses total approximately $2 million a year. Looking ahead, we are actively working on the 2026-2027 budget. Trevor, Academica's CFO, will be coming out to work in person next week as part of this process, and we remain on track to present the proposed budget for board review at the June meeting. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, John. Just so you know, the finance team met with, at least ahead of this meeting, with him and his team, and we appreciate what they're doing, what they put together. But sometimes it seems like there may not be a lot of background or a lot of discussion. I will say this, this is the time of year that if you're not doing it, you should be, and that is looking at things, and thank you for putting in your attendance and how you're doing with that. That's a low-lying fruit to get dollars. Enrollment is another low-lying fruit as to how to do that better so that you get that. Remember that the best plan in education is word of mouth for trying to do marketing. So if you're trying to increase your enrollment without marketing and without getting everybody at the site talking to their friends, you probably won't be as successful. A lot of times we think, oh, marketing, yeah, that's where we spend a lot of money to put ads in the newspaper or online or at the movie theater, or we send things out. And maybe some of those can help, but there's nothing that will beat the fact that you have really green grass and everybody wants to come see your green grass and be part of it. So please remember that. And if you... One thing I would say is that there are some best practices that appear to be happening with some of the teams. So, for example, when we look at the enrollment online, they're meeting their enrollment. They're doing some things. There might be some things that they're doing that might be applicable to the sites, to having, you know, people that are sitting in the seats. I'm thinking that there's best practices you might want to talk to them or to other colleagues that you have. There may be some things that you just haven't considered. One of the things, and this is the last point I would make, when we did the academy, the first year we got started, I know this sounds old-fashioned, but it seemed to work because... Boy, we packed that Blue Goose with over 1,000 people before we got started. And one of the things we did, and this time of year is when you see it, have you ever noticed how your mailbox gets just chock full of these mailers by political people? It's just, at times, it's just overwhelming. But there are organizations that have metrics, and they know where those households live that have kids in certain age bands. And those mailers are super cheap. That's why you get so many of them. If you do a really good mailer, targeted at those age bands, you might be surprised how that targeted marketing might yield some results. So if you're interested in that, it's, you know, we've got connections where you'd be able to get that information. So we're just throwing out some ideas because I think this is the time of year to be thinking about that. All right, let's move to the consent agenda. Actually, I really want to pull item G and item H as to talk about reversed. Did anybody want to pull anything else from the consent agenda?
Pull as it moved to discussion after agenda?
Just to, we do the rest of the consent agenda, then talk about these two things, and then approve them or not approve them for you.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so we'll pull items G and H. That's my motion. Do I have a second?
I will second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
So do I have a motion for the rest of the consent agenda, A through F?
I will make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Welcome back.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Item G, it's approval of surplus property. I'm just curious. This came from the El Dorado campus. I noticed there were 250 Magna Cartas. Do you know what that is?
Yeah.
It's a children's book? Okay.
We used to read it when we were
Okay, so it's not something that the elementary would use. Okay. I just asked that. The other thing is I noticed there were 9 copies of Little Riches as an example. And then there was The Story of the World by Susan Weisbauer. I mean, these are really powerful things that if I were in the online program even, or if I were doing some giveaway books, there might be some parents and others who might want. I don't know what we're going to do with it. I'm just saying when I looked at that list, I thought those are really powerful resources that I don't know where we take it to, where we get the money. Do you know?
Sheldon's the one that organized them.
Okay.
So he's been trying to sell them, but I think we've tried to see if anybody wants them and nobody wanted them. So.
Okay.
I talked to Sheldon, and a lot of these were books we've used in the past as class sets, and now he's kept some in the library.
Okay.
We still have a whole bunch of extra. I do think it's a good idea to maybe push it out to the other, like elementary and other campuses, maybe there'd be some there they want. I think it'd be a good idea. And that's what we did discuss, but these were
costly. Yeah, we're at the point where he's done everything you can. I'm just saying that these are some really good things, and that they're, these are some of them more elementary oriented. And I think, you know, behooving to see what they are before we just give them away or whatever ends up happening.
That Magna Carta is written about it at the fifth grade level.
I bet you I could tell them the story of Magna Carta in one of the classrooms and they'd all come up afterwards and say, I want that. And that's because in 1215, when it was passed, did you know that it was passed in Congress, the Bill of Rights, on 1215? Now that is the source of the Bill of Rights. John Adams signed that along with one other individual on 1215 of 1789. I know I've read enough about him to know that he picked dates because they were important. He didn't just pick that out of the air. Oh, I just happened to sign on 1215. Yeah, let me sign that. No, he knew exactly what he was doing. And can I prove it? No. But I read enough about him to say that.
Secondly, when I went to England and I sat there in those chairs at Runnymede, and it, as though we were there with King John, and we sat there and I thought, you know, this is a powerful document. Do you know that there's only one monument there at Runnymede? And do you know who put it there? The American Bar Association, not England. The American Bar Association put it there in about 1960-ish. I'm thinking, how come it matters more to America? Because we have a Bill of Rights. And I thought, wow. So yeah, when I saw those on there, I'm thinking, I wonder how many of them know these stories. And if they knew them, they might say, hey, that's a pretty good story. And I want to keep that in my personal library. I want to have that. I'm thinking, how could you have a library about freedom without that? See what I'm saying? Enough said.
You know, so I'm very passionate about it.
Oh, I love that. I keep going, but I'll save the set and the third story another time. Because there's other things there that are unique, but they're American once again, and that's the irony of it. Okay. Next item is approval of annually renewable employer at-will agreements.
Department.
Yes.
Do you want to call for a motion on item G?
We're going to do both together on these last two.
Thank you.
So these agreements, I think it's important to make sure, and I don't know where we do this, but this is the question. It's important that people have reviews during the year. In other words, you don't just sign an agreement. Okay, it's the beginning of the year. Let me sign that. End of the year. Well, how did it go? What? That doesn't matter. It means. They want to know, and we want to make sure, I mentioned this to everyone, that they have a review during the year, at least three, if not four times a year, to be able to ask questions like, who's your mentor? What are you reading? I gave you a formal evaluation of your class, how it went on a couple of occasions, at least, like I said, three. Because what happens is then at the end of the year, it becomes self-evident whether they're a good fit for us and whether we want them. You know what I'm saying? And then we have kind of the paper trail and everybody's happy because no one says, gosh, this is the first I heard of it. Thinking, well, actually, no, because we have a trail here. So I mentioned that because I don't know if that's part of those with those agreements, but they need to be, and we need to make sure that we're doing that. That's critical. It's indispensable. So, you know,
we're all using the same admin evaluation. We're using the same teacher evaluation, class evaluation across all campuses. It's actually what you said, but it's also, there's also goal setting and reporting. So there's goal setting, reporting, and all these evaluations, all of the admin worked together on them last year. This is the first year we're implementing so that they're the same across all campuses. I think it's going well. I haven't heard anything, so no news is good news. But I don't know. But I just know that I went through with the Central Kitchen today. I'm bringing that in line with the same evaluations that the other evening. So, yeah.
I ask principals and being current in the process of doing those evaluations. Even now, I don't know if we want to show up hands now.
No, I don't want to put them on the spot. But I want them to reflect and say, if I haven't done this, that's a priority. And it's indispensable. Because I know that in the past, we haven't been as vigilant as we should be or could be. And so it sounds like we have the tool, and I just want to make sure everybody has the tool. Everybody has the tool, okay? And then, you know, when we get to this, then, you know, some things, as Jefferson said, become self-evident as the
rights and other things. Okay. Thank you. So it sounds like that is part of these at-will agreements, and it's not only assumed, but it's a necessity. Everybody knows that it's indispensable. Okay. Good. All right. So those are the two items. Do I have a motion on those two items?
I make a motion to approve the purchase of property of the Navajo camp, although this would agree with that, allow them to.
It's going to go to the campus and then to Troy to circulate amongst the elementary schools and others to see if they want to do that, or maybe even parents square. And if they want the, I'll give them a story for later. How's that?
I can say that particular book, it leaves out the best part because it doesn't talk about the signing of the Magna Carta. So I'm not a fan of that book. It does talk about the history and aspect and everything, John, but that particular book, we have the real Magna Carta in our document books that all of our scholars read, so they do study that. But I'll just, it's good. It's a great time period piece, but they leave out the best part, and I don't know why.
So maybe it's just a supplement to your personal library.
Yep.
To give you a historical background.
Yep, the historical background is good.
Well, that, in addition to the approval of the annually renewable employee at-will.
Okay.
There's second.
I will second that motion. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Next is we have item A under discussion and action agenda, discussion and possible approval of electives.
Last week, Mildred Hills presented some electives. I think we have one from Roseville as well. This go around, we have some electives from our online program, and Dr. Meeks is here to share the five electives they would like to add to their.
Yeah, appreciate that. Thank you, Troy, and thank you, board. We're excited to have a need to expand our electives as we continue to grow in our secondary and our elementary program. These are specific for secondary. We want to solve two problems by doing this. One is we are going to aggressively work with our scholars that we have identified with CASP, CAST, MAP, teacher recommendation, who are low in reading and mathematics. And we want to work with these scholars aggressively on a quarter basis to bring them up to speed to their grade level. So we want to identify them throughout the year and move them into classes such as mathematics intervention, reading and writing intervention, and move them out when they're done. So these particular electives are designed to be taught on a quarter basis, although they can be written for a quarter and up to a year. This will allow scholars to do intervention, allow other scholars who want some other variety in their electives besides music and art and PE that we offer right now to take a variety of things in our American classical leadership education. So they include verse and virtue, a poetry appreciation class, myth and meaning, exploring Tolkien's Middle Earth, liberty in the machine age, addressing AI, yoga and stretch, foundations for physical wellness, and then an athletic performance and training practicum for our scholars who are doing extreme sports, gymnastics, soccer, and such, to be able to have a way to earn PE credit while they're doing those things for many hours a week. What else can I give for background on those that you'd like to know?
So if you were going to take any of these, what would the book or classics, and I assume you have a mentor that is passionate about that particular thing, but I'm curious as to what the classics would be that they're reading.
Yeah, great question. And you're to answer mentor who's interested, we asked for mentors who did have a passion in something that supported our American classical leadership education to write proposals for these. So some of our very best teachers, and I think you would see that fairly on in that packet that you have, some of our very best teachers that you know. So in the verse and virtue poetry appreciation class, we would be using, I think I have it listed, American history. Let's see, American history.
The required classics for that are Robert Frost, Emily Dickinson, Walt Whitman, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, William Wordsworth, John Keats. I mean, they may have some supplemental to go along with
that. I'm sorry, I didn't see that in the packet if it was in there.
Oh, yeah, it's in there. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and a lot of those are from the 100 Best Loved Poems that most of our scholars have that we use in multiple classes. It would be taught by Alexandra Umlis, who is a published poet and one of our top humanities teachers.
Excellent.
The Tolkien classics are The Hobbit, Lord of the Rings, and the Silmarillion?
Right. Right, and Mr. Jensen is someone who's very passionate about Tolkien, and he has a pretty strong vision for that class. There's so much to do with themes such as good and evil, courage, sacrifice, redemption, friendship, that he would be covering there.
For the Liberty and the Machine Age, they're actually reading Aristotle of Ace. They're going to look at the Aristotle's understanding of the human person, rational animal, three acts of the mind. They will be discussing difference between liberal and servile activities and education. They'll be looking at the virtues of technological stewardship, the use and misuse of intellectual and moral virtues guiding technology.
Yeah, that's great. And that would be taught by Emmanuel Simon, who's actually finishing up and working on his dissertation on a PhD in philosophy.
The required text arena is Aristotle's Porphyry, St. Thomas Aquinas. Those are required. And Descartes, Bacon, Rousseau were some of the readings for that one.
Well done, Jesse.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate that.
Just let the teachers know how much we appreciate them doing that.
Okay, for sure.
Okay. Any questions? If not, have a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve the elective for the online program.
I will second that one.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. Next is discussion of senior trip to Philadelphia with Founding Forward. Roy, did you want to go over the finances of that first as a lead-in?
Sure. So I'm going to trust this date. I didn't write this date. I now have another data sheet that I sent to Dr. Corbin, but it looks about right. So we had about 80 scholars go this last year, and with 12 parents, but anyway, with several parents. First of all, it was an amazing trip. I think they've already reported on it. Excellent. When we look at dollars, and the total expense for that trip, I apologize because I didn't put this. Yeah, like I have to pull it up.
This is about $150,000.
Yeah. Okay. I put another paper together. I wasn't where this there. This would be here. So I know what.
More.
Yeah. Received is 82,600 received. I know initially when we talked to the campuses, we said we wanted the scholars to come up with half. And we basically did that in terms of our goal. Is our initial goal was campus would pay for half, scholar would pay for half. And we about hit that right there. What we didn't know is some of the finances weren't really there. And so that was a misstep. And so it meant we were picking up more than we thought. Most of the scholars paid. There are some that did not, and we're aware of that. We reached out multiple times through phone call and letter, and we're still continuing. So there's still a couple on payment plans that are still sending money in. I want to pull up. I almost want to put my other sheet, so I know where I'm speaking from. But long story short, just my recommendation, we want to keep the trip. It's inspiring. But we can't do it the way we've been doing it. And I don't know, Dr. Foreman, if you'd like to present your idea of aligning with the foundation or letting the speaker.
Well, I do think the trip is amazing because it is in alignment with who we are, where we've been, where we're going. The reviews of those that have gone have been stellar. They've enjoyed it immensely. They've learned a lot. And one thing that's really good about it too is it allows the campuses to be together in a situation where they get to meet others that they didn't know went to a sister campus. And that's been very beneficial too. My challenge with this is that we're ideally graduating scholars with an understanding of the 10th core value. And many of them have either decided to not fill their obligation or what they said they would do in going on the trip, or they have just kind of banished and ghosted those that have called. And so I'm thinking, well, I don't really want to be in the business of being a collection agency. I don't think anybody does. That's not what we're in. We're in the education business to be inspired and to invite them to an inspiring opportunity. And so I thought, you know, what if we have a situation where we just say, you know, this year's going to be different. And the reason I'm bringing it up now is because we have the whole summer to let them go home and earn some money. And then maybe if they earn some money, then the foundation could agree to match a portion of that money. And since it's foundation sponsored, then if someone doesn't go, they can't say, well, you know, I just didn't know about it or this or that, or, you know, isn't this school sponsored? You have to have me come. I'm just going to get it for free or whatever. And I'm thinking, no, this means that everybody will have to think about it ahead of time and make a conscious choice that that's what they want to do. And then the foundation can hopefully fill in that gap. But I wanted to mention that because I think that's a reasonable way to go forward. I know Myra's here tonight. Myra, I'd be interested to know what you think of that, what you've seen, what you've observed, and maybe there's other ideas we should be considering. Obviously, we have our principals here too of the secondary. I'd be interested to know what you think of this or what suggestions you might make for that.
Don't need to go out for it.
Just stand up if you would. You can stay where you are.
I'd like to second that. The Orsini trip or patron expedition is an amazing experience as far as the years. It's the accumulation of what we've been teaching them since kindergarten. Seeing the scholars going into the trip and leaving the trip, they are different people. They understand the mission and vision of what we're trying to do for our scholars. It would be my hope that as we continue forward, every scholar has the opportunity to attend. I think our biggest limitation is it is expensive. We live on the West Coast. It costs about $2,000 to attend the trip. We have been lucky that up until now, the scholars have only had to contribute half of that. One of the problems is law dictates that anybody who wants to attend a field trip can't. So some scholars, knowing that, go on the trip without contributing anything, which is a detriment to those who want the trip to succeed. So it'd be nice to find a leeway between asking to pay for the full $2,000, which is a lot of money for scholars who are looking at college and future expenses, but still affording them this opportunity. I think as we look forward through fundraising efforts and in both individually and as campuses, I feel like the hope would be to offset the costs in the long run. But in the short run, I don't think that's going to be a key. So if the foundation was able to take this trip and pivot in that way, that might be the best solution. I'd love to hear from the principals.
Thank you.
Is the foundation running
the
trip?
I didn't follow your question, I guess.
Well, we would, the question is, could we use school communication channels like their John Adams County emails, Parent Square? We could, because we can, usually what we do for a non-JA trip is we allow the first couple communications to go via channels, and then we get to capture their, you know, the private information. We can look at that and see, make sure we're not abusing the use of communication, but we can at least start. And we could even pre-populate all the contact data for every junior right now with the foundation so they can start communicating directly.
I think the question was more to, can we pay money towards it if it's a foundation trip? Because I don't think you're talking about big.
Oh.
He's talking about fundraising with Genetics. So we've been trying to raise dollars towards that at the campus. We've been trying to come up with solutions for individual scholars to raise their own money and pay their way. So if we're doing fundraisers or those types of things, can that money then be used? Is the question.
That's a good question. And it's actually, I've had a couple of meetings. The question is, can one nonprofit contribute to another nonprofit? And I think we need to sit down and map that out. I think so.
I would argue fundraising dollars, but we could not use LCSF dollars or other state monies to do it.
Yeah.
But if we're fundraising matters, yes. And I think that's how we as a school could help contribute to it for having skin in the game. But I think it's a valuable trip. I don't want to lose it. And so our idea is to, once scholars enter seventh grade, begin raising money as a class. So the class of 2035 is raising money for their senior trip. And then once the cost of the trip is paid, then any excess money would go towards other service activities or other things the class would be doing related to our mission and vision. But if we can build that from day one that they enter secondary and attach it into a class account, then those dollars can help be there to fund through that fundraising effort.
And I would recommend we've got support of it. Three different fundraising platforms earlier, but we can use one with the foundation. So every scholar gets their own account. They start raising money and making their deposits, and it's going into the bank account at the foundation. And they can look it up at any time, see their balance. We can look at it and see what the total balance is, and do push outs, and that's something that we can handle. Okay. Yes.
All right, if I don't question, but like, you know, right? So I like the idea of when you come to seventh grade, building up savings. But what happened is, and I think it was back to video, would help. That kid is not
going to
go
leave
the school
with them. Well, if they did, it would be a donation. Any money that they raise would be donations for the school that would use for this purpose. It wouldn't go with them. So we're not talking about having an individual account for a child that's their money. It's fundraising efforts at the class. And that those dollars stay with the class and they go to pay for the trip. So they reduce the overall cost for everybody. That's the way we're approaching.
Well, that could be, I think there could be two roles because there could be individually fundraised dollars for that's how the plate sports do it. So it depends on the methodology of the routine that we shoot.
Because you can track it by scholar, but it's not the scholar's fault.
No, it won't be the scholar. It could go towards office.
It's raised in their name for this activity. So if they leave in their freshman year, thank you for your donation. Have fun where you get. But we're keeping those dollars that they're donated to the academy for this program. But if they're here, it pays for the cost.
Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking of the way I'm going to be with the academy to 12
Yeah. That would be great. Instead of another incentive to save money and raise for.
What has the interest been feedback from parents? I know Zita sent out a survey overall of the campuses, but is the feedback strong or looking ahead to next year?
Out of our numbers, we had 34 want to go and 20 were undecided and 29 don't want. And I have about half of them are willing to contribute 1,000 and the participation funds are my concern would be with there will be kids who contribute nothing from 7th grade on to 12th. Do they get still on the trip?
Not if it's a foundation.
So we have to track individuals.
Yeah, we've got that solved, I think. But that's the idea is that if there's no skin in the game, then we end up with what we've been doing, and that's becoming a collection agency for the youth. And that's not the idea. So it's meant to be a benefit to them. And the Founding Forward opportunity, you know, they've got the facilities there and places they're visiting are just incredible. So it is where it is. And it's for those that have gone, I think they've clearly felt it was worth it, but that's the answer. It's something that you've got to plan for. And it's not that much money. I mean, think about this for a second. What's the minimum wage in California? I think it's $20, right? If you're working fast food. Okay. I'm just saying, most can do that. Even if this were their senior year coming up, how many hours does it take to accumulate $2,000? Well, I think it's 100 hours, right? So 100 hours, and they have a whole summer to do that if they wanted to pay for the whole amount, but that's not what we're talking about. But could you work arguably, I don't know, somewhere around 12 to 15 hours a week and save your money? It's not a lot. The school window. That's what we're getting ready from. Because we have freeloaders that want to get on and on paying. And then they say they're going to pay something, then we call them, send them, and then they ghost us. So this is a way to really encourage those that want to go to have skin in the game and do something meaningful together. So I wanted to just get any other feedback or things that you think we should know. I need to talk to the foundation, which I haven't talked to them yet. I'm constantly trying to look for ideas and ways to do something different. And I just wasn't happy with being ghosted. I'll be honest with you. Someone says they're going to do something, I'm like, I expect you to do it. And if you can't do it, just say, you know what, I can't do it, but I do payments like some did, or, you know, we've had a tough situation. I'm okay with all those things. What I'm not okay with is just ghosting when you made a commitment. That's not what we teach. When they graduate, that's not what I hope they leave with. I'm hoping they're leaving with the 10th core values. All right, well, if there's no other comments that way, what I think we will do is for those that have ghosted us, I just want to make sure that those are in fact legitimate. So you may receive some communication wanting to know if you're aware of something that we may not be aware of, because I think it's important as we get down to graduation, just find out if they will honor their commitment and give them one last chance. So that was all I had for the discussion. It's not really an action item today, but I wanted to see if everyone was open to the idea of it being board sponsored and ask the board to maybe do some sort of matching program. And I'm getting the consensus that that's something that would be important to go forward with. Is that correct? Zita? Okay, thank you. Myra?
I'm really appreciative of the foundation. So thank you. I think this is really exciting.
Okay.
And I would say it gives us one more tool to be able to be wise as we approach it financially, and the site still be involved with encouraging it, fundraising to support it. And then we can all have skin in the game, not just the individuals we're going, but also the sites. But then I like it going through the foundation so that it gives us more flexibility and more control.
Yeah.
I will say on a timeline, there is a little sense of urgency because we are usually already registered if we are going to, depending on when we do the trip. So if we're going to have a fall trip versus a winter trip, we need to make those decisions quickly so we can register kids before summer and really get those things set up. So
okay.
I just would like to make sure that we have a timeline that is.
Well, I have a foundation meeting on Monday afternoon, so. I should know what.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Next is discussion on materials donation.
We have we pulled the data over the last 5 years. That's for you. I think if you have that data in front of you, I don't know if the Google's have our data. And from that data, what is consistent is from about the year 21-22, we had a more substantial donation, almost double. That donation dropped quite a bit. This year, it's starting to go back up, but it's still far lower than it was in 21-22. And these are $100 donations. If we take the total amount received this year, we're looking at about 684 people paying when we have 4,000 scholars. So it's not quite a quarter this year paying that $100 donation. So I think that's the data. The conversation is, how do we improve?
Maybe even why did it drop off?
Thoughts?
Yeah.
So one of the things I'm getting a sense of just being in the school site now is that administration is so overwhelmed and packed day to day that we lose the accountability on the different campaigns that we're trying to do. And so what we talked about in Roseville is utilizing one of the board approved fundraising platforms that we're going to use, School Funder. I think it's the one that hadn't been used by the two sides, but to create a campaign for the material donation so that it's actually communicating and pushing out specifically for this. I think it's kind of gotten lost in the messaging. The expectation is there, but we're not really communicating it and we're not really holding anything accountable for it. By creating a campaign in platform, then we'll have the accountability and the trackability of it, and we can be able to communicate, see who's donated, who hasn't, and there'll be messaging on it. So it'll become a fundraising effort as opposed to an unaccountable expectation. That makes sense. That's the way we're going to approach it with that board-approved software going.
What makes it easy for someone to do it? In other words, we're in the Venmo society now, right? Who hasn't used Venmo? You know, it's kind of like, well, if they're back to school night or something, I'm like, did you make your donation? Here's the Venmo address where you send it. Pull out your phone, would you? Just send it. Or here's the button you push at this site and you can enter your credit card there. I'm just saying that when you have these things, you may need to make it easy on people. Because I think people are willing to do that, but they're busy. So make it easy for them.
And I love the idea too. And I think if we make it a campaign, we can fold in all those ways of making it easy.
Go ahead.
We did do that at orientation where they had to pull up a document. They had to do the signing of the agreement where they would recommit to the school. And then they also did a little bit more longer presentation on volunteerism, and then they had to sign up for volunteering in the different categories. And then we went a little bit longer in orientation, and then they had the opportunity to get the QR code to pay $100. So that avenue was and is and will be tackled as well, but we're still not seeing great results on that. So perhaps the reoccurrence of the fundraising app offered that. I think goes back to that. We are entitled to a field trip, so let us go on a field trip whether or not we pay. And I think that a lot of our society is still in that framework where people are not really allowed to vote for entitled to. We don't have to pay, so we're not. We need to change that.
We're coming from Roseville. Last year, Roseville raised $13,400. This year it was $23,500, so not quite double, but almost double from last year to this year. So whatever effort you did, bumped it up a lot, and now we just need to bump it up.
Bravo.
I'm amazed. Like some of these years, I can't believe we collected anything. I mean, it has to be the only people who paid were brand new families. Who, when they came in and we did orientation, we said, oh, by the way, there's $100 per scholar donation that we asked for. That's got to be the only reason we collected any money. Because I think in some of these years, as a parent, I don't think I ever received anything ever asking me to make my donation. I mean, there's been at least a couple of years, two or three years where I mean, as a board member, I was wondering, oh, they're going to ask for that. And they never did. I mean, I know a couple of years we went on and paid our $600 because we had six scholars here, and we had to search for like how do we pay it.
Then there you have to be like $600 to pay it, but I think the minority would be that. But I'm with you. They're needy, and they. Like thinking of something and then that one is right there, but then it's not that easy. Then it has to buy and then it doesn't come back.
Yep.
So I mean that's as a parent, as a teacher, I see different perspectives. I think you could improve on it. First, as a parent, being a school year, it's so busy, and that donation money is so I don't have to go to the store and buy all the supplies for my daughter. That's what is provided at the school. That's deal. I don't have to go fight all the other parents for notebooks at Walmart. That's my teacher, that's my kids' teacher, and they're like, oh, you don't need that. Save me money. So we need to keep that message. You are doing this, so you don't have to provide your scholars supplies. And the second, the teacher, when I'm giving them supplies, I remind them, you are getting this because of those donations, parents. Okay. That gives me the opportunity to give you paper and notebooks and tissues in the winter so that you don't have to worry about bumps and your parents up here. I feel so blessed as a teacher that I have this opportunity that I don't have to use my money and you don't have to worry about it either. And I think that's the message.
Well, you don't have to like waste an entire day of your life going around. I mean, I remember going around and spending a half a day of my life searching for all this junk. I was supposed to collect because they had like very specific things they want.
One store.
Yeah, when we came here, they was like, give us a $100 donation towards the supplies and we'll take care of it. Like, hallelujah. Here you go. Have fun. I'm shopping for all this stuff. But like I say, there's been years where we didn't have, I know for a fact that we were never even asked, you know, followed up or asked for the donation. Your comments make me think, I mean, how effective would this be if we had a pay link that made it as easy as possible to pay in any, you know, included Apple Pay, where I click on it, put in a thing, double click my phone, pay, included Venmo, whatever it took. We have that pay link, and how about if these emails went out from individual teachers? You know, if I got an email from my individual third grade teacher saying, hey, you know, the school year's starting in 2 weeks, and told that story that you just told, you know, not just we want our money, but here's, you know, a quick one paragraph, here's the story. You don't have to go around searching for things. We're not asking, we're not going to provide you with a list. And you got to go all over town looking for it. Click the link below. It's $100 for your one kid. You know, and then, you know, if you have multiple kids, you had six kids, you're going to get six emails, at least elementary. I don't know, maybe secondary needs to be a, you know, blast out to everybody. But I don't know, I just think, I mean, look at these numbers. I mean, we collected, you know, Roseville 23,000 this year. I mean, that could have been, that could be 150,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
Zita, Heather, do you have any comments about that?
I mean, I posted requests for donations earlier in the year in my newsletters on Parent Square. The constant feedback that I get on Parent Square is that there's too much going out and parents have stopped reading it.
Yeah.
So that's one problem.
Yeah.
I put a QR code up at the front desk. I don't know. I think there's been a lot of fundraising efforts, especially this year. I'm just going to be very candid. The parents have been asked to donate in a lot of different places. And they're to the point where, and I don't want to overgeneralize, but the consensus is that they're tapped out for donation. So I think we just have to be careful with how many avenues we use, how many campaigns we create, where are we fundraising for, it's just too much.
And again, if you have six kids, man, you're going
to
be getting
a fund. And there's a lot of parents that want to contribute, but we just have to be careful with how much we ask and the timing of everything. It's all big picture. You know, but they do care. Some of them don't like to go school shopping. Some of them would prefer to go school shopping. You're not going to make everyone happy, but you just have to be careful with our approach.
When would the timing be best on it?
Probably in the beginning of the school year. Like first thing.
Right.
First thing.
Right.
You know, now it's not.
Yeah.
To ask
no. Me. That's not the point of this discussion. The point is, if it's important, who's going to own it? Who's going to be the steward of it? And when is it going to happen? And then making it easy for them.
And really, Stripe is not hard. I donate on there all the time as a parent. It's
yeah.
Not hard. So I'm not sure if it's a matter of the ease of the process and just really the will to want to do it.
Yeah.
Is $100 too much? Should it be less? Should it be more? Should it be, you know, $100? It's not like this is an etched in stone. We just threw that number out there at some point. I mean, I don't know where we came up with $100.
Well, you came up with that because we actually looked at what the supplies would be and then figured so many would pay and we, you know, kind of
backed into it
that way. Yeah.
And the signs that we put out regarding attendance in front of the office, I wonder if during a guideline, beginning of the year, something like that, guideline with a QR code, parents should.
Or back to school,
not,
you know,
I like the think about the teacher thing though, because that's where the rubber hits the liquid.
They're going to be reading their classroom
as well. Yeah.
From
kindergarten.
One thing that they do read.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I mean. Go ahead.
And figure out who is paid because I only need to reach out to them individually. It happens. The reminder they're not the reminder that the year is sovereign. You just have a bunch of stuff. But we can't find who's paid.
Right.
Like, I like more than this idea where the students. That is a more important
thing.
And
in
the beginning, it was
really good. I think part of the problem, too, is just human nature. One of the reasons this hasn't worked over the years, nobody benefits from these funds. No individual benefits. If I made this policy, every teacher is responsible for sending out the emails and asking for the donation. And now all that money goes straight to you. And you can use it as you see fit. Do you think I'd have a better result?
Oh, yeah.
If every kindergarten teacher knew that if they got the $100 donation from the 30 kids, they'd get $3,000, boom, that they could spend however they want to spend it, would I have better results? And I don't know that I'm opposed to that particular policy, actually.
I don't know, really good.
Yeah.
You know, so the money's there. It's money they're going to spend. I mean, they would spend it in the authorized ways. I mean, they would spend it, you know, supply the receipts, et cetera, et cetera. But because the thing is, the money's not, you know, nobody's, you know, in a really big hurry. I mean, if I told principals, listen, you get a 10% commission on this thing added to, you know, the stipend. Okay, so Norman, collect $150,000 and we will add a $15,000 stipend to your salary. You get better results.
I like to motivate the people.
I'm just saying nobody gets anything.
Yeah.
And so we got the results we got.
I think it's a really good point because I think parents want to know what their money is going to specifically, right? When we just say pencils or whatever, pencils are cheap, you know? But I know a lot of elementary teachers, and I was an elementary teacher, I would have like an Amazon wish list where it's just a wish list, and parents can pick out to see like, oh, I'm going to be paying for like a slip books from my kids' classroom library. Of course, I'm going to have to donate to
a big mat, carpet.
Yeah.
So, and over the years, we've had people that have made the donation, parents that have made the donation, and then withdrawn the dollar, and then trying to get the donation back later. It's like, they want the direct benefit, right? And so when you talk about who's benefiting directly from it, it's on both sides. A lot of the folks who don't give because it's not tied to their dollar.
So I'm up for a change in the amount. I'm up on a change for the process. I'm up for a change. I mean, because I think it's going to benefit us. I'd love to see it benefit individual classrooms.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to see individual teachers, you know, benefiting from it rather than going into the big old general fund where we just use it for whatever.
We have the accounting capacity to do that with some program to keep track of each teacher in their classroom.
So we're getting there. I think by next year we will. This year, that's been a problem where people donate and getting them to the right account. But I think our
secondary is stupid.
I'd love to figure that out. Yeah. I will say we have a tool next year that we've never had before, and that's our new Infinite Campus. And Infinite Campus will give every parent a portal into their financial, they have a financial portal.
And they can donate through there.
Yeah, we right at the beginning of school, we put a $100 donation on every single scholar in the school. Just boom, and
the only
there.
Thing that you need for this to work is for the individual teachers to have visibility.
Yeah,
that's it, man. They will solve whatever problem, whatever your accounting problem is. That individual second grade teacher will solve it if she can see who donated what.
Many other teachers who may not be doing it because you get less per scholar. So I get 100% donation.
No, we have to come up with something different in secondary.
Yeah, we need to think that secondary would be different than elementary.
And we're going to see participation in secondary at a lower level than we are in elementary, just like we see with PSO donations. You know, where does the bulk of our PSO donations come from? Elementary, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think, and for the same reason that I'm trying to articulate. it's the same thing, right? More people in elementary donate because they can see a direct impact.
Mm-hmm.
They see where their money goes. They can, you know, they have some control over it. And there's some accountability. I mean, we've been preaching this. This $100 donation is just, I've almost wanted to just get rid of it because it's fuck. It's like, okay.
Let's make sure it goes back to them and they see that.
Yeah.
The transparency aspect of this for the teachers would be tremendous. Why don't we ask Academica to see if there's a way to come up with some accounting ability to do this and to empower teachers. I love empowering people to do this. And they'll figure out a way, like Roy said, then it's all their money. And I want them to do that. Then how many times have you had a teacher say, I wish I could have this in my classroom or that? And they're thinking, well, yeah, it's too hard to get to the money. I'll just do it myself. And I'm thinking, you know, they have modest incomes as it is. And to put one more thing on them where they have to go through a big process, the idea is we just something simple to track it and then a simple process for them to spend it, you know?
I will say most of the, right now, $100 donation goes into supplies that are bought in bulk, you know, it's the paper, the pencil, whatever. And we don't want to put it on the burden of the teacher to have to go do the shopping. But I do like the idea of, like, right now they have a budget, a classroom budget. We're talking, what is the classroom budget now? A year, $100 a year, $100 a year, $100 a year?
That's what we're doing.
$100, but
that's not enough.
But if they get a percentage,
their
they get a percentage
budget is $100.
No, you have to clarify. It's like, for having teachers have $200 to set up the room, it's for like bulletin board stuff. And but supplies is a completely different thing.
Yeah, we pay for that.
So we pay for that.
It's a work extra.
To an extent.
So what if we do a higher
rate? If we did an incentive, we
keep half of it,
and they get more than 100.
Oh, we keep 25%, yeah. They keep 7. I don't know what.
Exactly. That's what.
But you just do a higher rate.
Yep.
I think you need to train for two. I think the responsibility of the principal will be to, you know, do a little bit of training or supply them with the email that they're going to use.
Yeah.
That's just not, we want the money, but tell the story. You know, we're saving you time going around and doing all this and the shopping list, et cetera, et cetera. That story is a powerful story. And here's what we're asking for.
I think you can also put on like, what we're purchasing with this,
yeah,
it costs $200.
But we're buying in way larger
bulk
than you can. We got to be paying less than what you would pay.
Oh,
I don't think these pay for it with paper. I don't think $100 per student would pay for our coffee machines.
No,
let alone pencil.
I think it could have a real impact, and we're not, I mean, and we're. And it could really make a difference in individual projects.
So where do we want to leave this?
I think what you just said is let's task Academica with how does this get done?
The accounting side of it.
Right. Yeah. How do we track this? If individual teachers send out an email to 30 households and these households click on a link and pay the money, you know, and again, the little PS at the end is just like, if you flat out can't afford $100, donate what you can or something. I don't, but if they click on that link and pay the money, then how does that individual teacher have visibility? I mean, I need to see a spreadsheet and just go down and say, oh, look at that, you know. But what, sorry?
We already do that with field trip donations in elementary.
So we're tracking it somehow.
Track it by individual families so that we follow up with them.
And how's that happen?
And it's very labor intensive.
Okay, that's what I like to fix.
Yeah.
It is. There are only ways to do it. You know, with field trips, there's a little bit more at stake because we can revoke the field trip if the donations don't come in. That's the caveat to that.
Yeah.
And parents don't want that to happen. With supplies, it's harder because they're disposable, right? You go through them, you don't ever see them. There's
you know, experience that you're getting. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't know. I think that if we maybe are a little bit more careful with how much we spend in purchasing supplies, we can make a difference in this budget, because our teachers are very fortunate and blessed with what they have in their classrooms. And that's something that I hear a lot when I get substitutes on campus. They can't believe how many supplies our kids have, and we buy them all. So there's probably some adjustments that we can do with what we're buying too. And I know we already made progress in that area, but there's probably room for more improvement.
Okay.
So if we let teachers start spending money, then we're going to bring all the stuff in the classroom. We don't have any control of that. And one of the reasons why I think we started doing the $100 donation is so that we have some consistency and coherency in the classroom with non-distractible supplies, right?
Yeah.
So we just have to be careful with how much we give teachers leverage with, right? Because it also takes a lot of time for principals to approve just $100 from every teacher. I mean, I've got 50 teachers with $100 to spend, and I'm approving things all the time to make sure that it's academy line, right?
So we got I can fix that. The $3,000 or $2,000 or whatever you collect from these, no approval. Spend it however you want. Mm-hmm. You don't have to contact your principal. You don't have to do anything. Just go ahead and spend.
Yeah.
Well, then I'll tell you something about the teacher. That'll give you some information.
Maybe it's a combination of doing that, but then making sure they know what the guidelines are in terms of the how class line, how classroom is set up, and so forth. But, yeah,
they're all going to put that dude's different than the principal. What was he thinking?
Sometimes less is more, boy. That's why we have 10 core values. If I put out all the laws that you got to obey, it's like that shows a society in decay, because you can't make enough laws to control human nature. You have to have some sort of control in this, right? Go ahead.
And what other schools do, if the fees aren't paid off, the kids don't get to pay, and then they get paid for the
tax. We can't do that to the bigger range. We can't charge people. So we can definitely have it there and attract it. We can't compensate with it, but we can't require privilege.
Well, you can definitely, in terms of maybe you're going to use this, I'm just hypothetically saying, for a field trip, I'm thinking, maybe that's one of the incentives to do this, is that it helps us with our ability to enrich the experience. That's really what we're talking about. And enrichment defined could be this, that, the other, whatever it is. But you're trying to enrich the educational experience. I would use that word, give them a few examples, and then see what you get with it. Yeah.
And we have to... On top of all that, I mean, I don't have to even say it probably, but on top of that, I don't want any individual scholar to suffer if they flat out don't have the money. I mean, right? We've had scholars here that are living in the back of a car. They're homeless. If you have a scholar that flat out can't afford this or that, then give me a call.
Thank you. All right. Could we ask the principals to think about this? Maybe talk about it with your deans and others, and maybe your teachers, and say, you know, here's some guidelines. How can we do this to help you and make it easier for, you know, enriching your experience for your classrooms? I think if we do that and let everybody own it, but ultimately, the steward's got to be probably the principal in seeing that it happens.
The fact that you have to approve how each teacher spends $100 is nuts. It's $100.
You have to distinguish between the 150 for teachers to set up their classroom and 200 for new teachers. That's something completely different than what we're talking about here. The material donation goes into a pot by supply, and as departments, they're making decisions as to one, and they're getting approval for big purchases and things. Otherwise, they're just putting in supply requests to the business tech. And the business tech is getting them supplies and getting them what they need and getting them out of inventory. So this is not a big bureaucratic process, like it's starting with down. But I love the idea of incentivizing teachers by letting them see how much did they raise for their classrooms, you know, and then start asking what can we use that for? But if you unfetter it, then they get things that you couldn't, that's not aligned with the model. We wouldn't have been getting things in our approved curriculum, or, you know, like we had a request once years ago in elementary to get handheld devices for every kindergarten. Well, we don't want kindergartners on a screen, right? And so it's like, well, we wouldn't want teachers going and buying tech, right, for TK.
Yeah.
Hey, board, can I make a comment?
Yeah.
So I just think.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just think, you know, it's maybe a side to this, but when we talk about infusing money, free money into the organization, I think that there's so many opportunities with grant writing. Through the years, I've had teachers write grants for all kinds of amazing pieces of equipment. And it's like, it's significant money that sometimes goes multiple years. So I wonder if we could have Academica put together, you know, a seminar with some of their teachers who've written really good grants and just do some coaching about how we could help our teachers write grants to infuse some of that free money in.
Some of that's happened, right? I mean, Academica has kind of helped us with some of the grant writing and things.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you. And if you bring this up to your sites, and we'll have Academica, then we'll bring it back again next month and see if we can bring it to some sort of conclusion. Next is a discussion of the volunteerism. We put some numbers in there. Go ahead, Brian.
The volunteerism numbers are from this spreadsheet here. And I will say this is a goal that all sites are working on. And we've seen some, I believe, significant improvement in volunteer hours and just tracking. We found that ParentsSquare doesn't cap. We were using ParentsSquare, which was a great tool, but it wasn't capturing everything I've done. And the principal went to work and started realizing, well, parents sign in when they come in to volunteer. Let's capture those logs. Let's find these other avenues for tracking. And you've got the hours here. I don't know what Eldorado Hills Elementary is doing, but you've got over 8,000 hours documented. Everyone else is pushing about 23 to 2,500. And so I don't know what you're doing, Heather, but you're...
Yeah, let's hear
four times as much.
Offer opportunities to volunteer in the classroom all the time. We track everyone that comes into the door. They have to sign in. So it's everything from, helping maybe in the lunchroom or the PSO. You know, they're being on events all the time. So we're logging, we're actually not even logging the hours that happen outside of the school day. You can believe it. It's just the traffic in and out of the front office. So it's pretty incredible. I have to really commend our PSO for that, because they're doing a lot for us.
Is this the Raptor software?
We don't even have that yet.
Okay.
So we're manually counting the hours from our paper pencil sign-in sheets every month.
Is there any reason we couldn't do this at all the sites?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think the community just wants to be there. I mean, every site is a different demographic. You know, ours is unique in their own way. So, yeah, it's from the parent perspective, your teachers also do a really good job of communicating the newsletters and trying to just really easy ways and lots of opportunities for parents to feel welcome to come in.
So elementary donated 8,340 hours. Did we just not track secondary? Because it says 0 hours.
No, is that I just didn't get it.
What's that? Okay. I was going to say, I know it's not
weird.
2,500. Okay. You are so well. So, people. And we love their office. We also, I think, too, is our drama department has been very active this year. So, we've had, I think, a large community of volunteers help with all of our drama productions. And so that's building some more opportunities for parents. I'm not sure.
Is that after school?
Was it hours? Yeah, because it's mostly after school. But
is that even counted?
It might not be.
Oh.
But just on campus
all. I think that's the case with all of them. I'm wondering if there's some, once again, a way to just be real simple. Or someone could.
Raptors get that running. That you're not going to be able to get through the door during the instructional day without logging in. And that will collect.
Can you share that with the other sites? And with, I don't know, Troy, if you've seen that. But if we've got it at one site and it appears as though it's going to work, I think it probably should be shared.
It does a lot more than just practice parents. It does a go ahead, but well, there are packages that go along with it, and depending on what you choose and pay for, you get some level of background check as part of it. That's the package you choose. So there are some safety enhancements besides the parent track that are very positive and. So there's other things that aren't as obvious that are benefits of after.
What is the cost for this?
I think our startup fee was around $2,500 for the year, and annually it's $2,000. So it's a minimal fee.
That's modest.
The PSO agreed to pay that for.
Basically, parents will scan their ID. Prints out a computer badge, stick it on, it already did a background check. So, with their picture.
Hold the picture from my ID, so she has a little bit of walking around. Yeah, their name and then.
With security.
So, would there be any reason at the other sites why you wouldn't want to look into this? What could we do to help you do that?
I was wondering if we could jump right in or we could let them experiment and see if it works. Although we saw the school, we saw one of the academic schools was using it, we did that in Vegas, and they use it.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be a good resource. He did a lot of the legwork and talked to the company,
so I'd reach out to him. He's a tech guy, so it's right up his alley.
Yeah, we had looked to get this approved years ago from the safety perspective, and it didn't get approved. But my understanding is that the per pupil cost, as well as the annual fee, is and so that might be for a higher level of package.
It offers a software and having to replace our guideline software, but we didn't want to jump in too deep. Right now, got a lot of changes happening, so we're gonna give this a try and see. But that would be an additional fee, maybe for people. I'm not sure.
All right. Well, thank you for the volunteerism. I think there's good volunteerism happening in a lot of it, not track. Be nice to be able to know. Have a more accurate assessment.
And then as part of this, hopefully encourage greater participation. That's really the ultimate goal, right? So when do you plan on implementing it?
Hopefully we're going to get it up the last month of school so we can work out cake before August. We had to push up a few, like I have a little bit of sponsor training.
Okay.
You have to buy the label that goes for jobs. Monthly plan, try to get all the people that will be using a train and how to use it. And then I have to get communication out to our families about the implementation process. We've done a lot of field trips, and I think the field trips contributed to the bulk of the volunteer hours because those are all parents led.
Okay. Be nice to have that and see if they do something retroactively to say, you know, I can look back on the year and say this, it was so many hours. I'm just thinking that that might be a way to just get people involved. But you go ahead and pilot it, see how it goes, and if you wouldn't mind getting back to us with what you see. Because I think, once again, making it easy is a really good thing. Next item is summer school program, item E.
Yeah, this is Mr. Roosevelt. Roosevelt's proposal. I don't know if you want to speak to this, Carmen, but basically it's a 4-week summer school program similar to how we've run it the last 7 years. There'll be two humanities teachers, which are already on contract. Two math teachers. There'll be two sessions, two-week sessions. Lincoln scholars are invited to participate. Would it be mostly, is it a credit recovery or just actually taking the whole class again from scratch? I'm not sure, but
it's the by semester to make up the semester.
Post one semester two?
Yeah. Same as we've done it previously.
We're good. I like to. Any questions by the board? Not to have motion.
I'll make a motion to approve the Roseville Secondary Summer School Math and Humanities as presented.
Second.
Okay, all in favor? Aye. Aye. Thank you. Next is discussion and approval of summer project.
And we would like to lay out the facilities. Go ahead and present to you a project here at the John Hopkins Academy Roseville campus. There's a remodel project that we've been working with engineers on to put together some approvals to put up some partition walls, which will consist of metal framing with insulation. In the schematic that you'll see, the floor plan, we're going to be adding, we're proposing to add two classrooms and building the upstairs and two more with some walls downstairs of building B, and then also an additional room and the foundations, four foundations in the multi-purpose room. And so we would like to propose to the board today that they would please take a look at those things and approve soft costs not to exceed the $291,231. So that we can go ahead and move forward with permitting and obtaining quotes and making sure the year works, that the shovel's ready to hit the ground and the school is out. So we would like to just ask the board to make a motion if we could do that. And then, of course, as you do know, once we get those quotes and contracts in, the board will be able to do that. The way to do it moving along so they can prepare to have 30 plus key-based followers in the program, which
questions?
Father of money to the program.
If my grandfather was born in 1918, would have a heart attack.
That's going to be $300,000 to put up basically a few, like three non-bearing walls.
Four, yes, non-bearing walls.
It seems like something, like one of my contractor buddies could hack in like tonight if you needed it. For like $4,500. Does it not?
Just saying.
I did talk to Barry McLean today, and I'm a little perplexed by the figures, but he did say that, you know, that will come in under budget.
Yeah.
That is just obviously a software place for the start. I know it's crazy.
Every time we approve something, it comes in under budget.
We'd like to pay much to have that approved so we can move forward.
Oh boy. I'll make a motion that we approve the summer project at Roseville.
All in favor?
Aye.
Did you want to make a motion to make sure you're clear to the stuff provided it doesn't exceed the cost?
It's in there.
Okay, perfect.
I see it delegates the board chair.
go ahead and speak to actually the other part of this, which is the summer project updates, which I know that Gary has been meeting with each of. Gary McLean has been meeting with the facilities team, and you'll see on there some proposed projects for each of the campuses. I don't believe that there are any order of priority other than just getting them on paper as to what summer projects look like for each of the campuses. It's nothing to vote on. We're just making sure that if you have any questions for us, we can answer them.
I'd like the principals to look at those projects and to prioritize them as to the highest priority. And then, like I said, we need to come back, bring them back. I need to know what we have in our project and maintenance funds.
I already have that figured for you. For just EDH and Roseville, we have $381,000.
What is that? Each site's different.
There, say that again.
Each site is different.
Well,
in other words, those are bond funds.
That's
so
the
you
bond.
Can't take one site and use it for another.
Right. That's the way Trevor presented it to us. He gave it to us in one lump project fund.
Yeah.
So we've been looking into that.
Yeah.
He said this is your project fund for El Bronzeville and Postville. But we can look
yeah.
at
it. Yeah, we just need to. Yeah. And then let's prioritize it with the principals as to what their highest priorities are. That way we can be shovel ready.
Perfect.
Yeah. Perfect.
All right.
Thank you. So do I have a motion to approve those summer projects?
Is there a motion there, or is it just FYI?
I don't know.
Yeah, we're going to. But I think we should give ourselves discretion to move forward based upon what we see there, because the next time we meet is May, and it's almost related to the reason. Ready. So I'm thinking if we improve it and we get it, those things laid out, then we can, in consultation with the principals, decide what improvements to move forward with. So I think we should just give conditional approval based upon their priorities and the money being available to be able to do that.
I'll make a motion then to the conditional approval for discussion.
Based on priorities and finances.
Thank
you.
I will second that one.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Next is discussion approval of the health benefits fund.
Good evening. For those of you that don't know me, I know everyone is here. My name is Amala Johnson. I'm the HR director. The 2026-2027 health benefit plan. So the current health benefit plan for the academy is structured around a fixed employer contribution that employees may apply across various HMO and high deductible HSA funds. So right now, that's
that had me contribute $9,000 for the employee only as an annual fixed contribution. And the Academy also provides $10,380 for employee personal spouse and their time. And the way it's structured is that, again, the employee can choose over a number of carriers. We have Kaiser, Sutter, Western Health Advantage, and for online, we have Aetna. And any remaining balance that's remaining after they apply to those premiums can then be allocated towards dental and vision premiums. So this model has allowed the Academy to provide certain predictability in terms of budget because it's a fixed amount. And I believe the last time this was set was probably around 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. The challenge continues to be that every year premiums obviously continue to increase and sometimes double digits. And what happens really is that because it's a fixed contribution, employees are now needing to bear a larger portion of those premiums. So very often, and probably like 90% of employees have to share the full dental and vision premiums as well because of the rising medical health premiums. So this proposal really introduces a revised contribution strategy that transitions to a percentage-based employer contribution model with a focus on a high-deductible HSA-qualified plan. And what that means is that the Academy will cover a defined percentage of medical premiums, so moving from fixed contributions to 80% of the premiums for the employee only and 70% for the employee with their dependents. It will also include increasing employee contributions to health savings accounts. So currently, the Academy is contributing $2,000 annually for employee only towards their health savings account. That will now increase to $2,500. And for the health savings account, contributions for employee plus dependents is currently at $3,000. That's going to increase to $4,250. At the same time, the Academy will also provide fixed percentage of employer contributions towards dental and vision. So that would be 80% for the employee only for both dental and vision premiums, as well as 70% for employee independents that goes towards those dental and vision premiums. Now, part of this restructuring of the health benefit plan is also to discontinue what we call the healthcare in lieu benefit. That is $2,100 that goes to employees who opt out of the medical health benefits. And the proposal seeks to reallocate those funds towards these enhanced employer contributions. In other words, for employees that don't need the medical health benefit, we're looking to discontinue this healthcare in the loop and reallocate it so that the employees that do need the health benefits we're now able to enhance the coverage for them. So in your board packets, again, there's a summary of all of those changes and what realistically, we had a question when we were discussing this realistically, what does it look like in terms of how much employees are paying now? Well, obviously it will be dependent on their plan, but just to give you an example, for an employee and their family in the HMO plan for Kaiser, they're currently paying $1,200 roughly a month in premiums. And now in shifting to the high deductible Kaiser plan, they will only be paying $468 a month. So that's just an example. Again, it depends, right, on what plan they're currently on. We will still retain all of those different vendors. We will retain the high deductible HSA plan for Kaiser, Sutter, and our Western Health Advantage. And our current and the plans are all high deductibles created. Any questions?
So it sounds to me like, I mean, this is not only saving the account money, but also contributing more to the employees.
Yeah, so based on the calculations, and we can never really predict how what our employees are going to do, right? But based on our, you know, best calculations, if we have, we will end up with a cost saving of about $78,000. But then again, we don't know if employees who are currently on the healthcare loop are now going to say, oh, well, looks like we've got a good deal going on here, that they might actually avail of health benefits. So currently these are just based on our projections. We will be saving about $78,000, but I think that's a fair enough buffer to cover or offset any changes in enrollment.
I don't envy you for never find a gap.
No.
I'm sure.
Well, these things, just because it's a lot, I mean, these things impact families individually different ways, right? I mean, you're not going to opt for some high deductible plan if you're in a situation where somebody in your family is currently using health care at a high level. You know, you're probably going to stick with a plan that doesn't require the high deductible, right?
Well, there are out-of-pocket maximums,
right?
And I believe that, you know, in doing a survey of benefits that are provided, not only in education settings, but John Adams really does contribute a lot to the HSA. It's one of the few organizations that does contribute to an HSA. And those funds can be used to pay for that. And if we really, if we look at it for an employee and their family, that's $412 that's going into their HSA account every month, which they can use towards co-pays, they can use towards the deductible, and they can use actually to a whole lot of, they can use them for classes, you know, for prescriptions, over-the-counter medications.
Yeah.
And moreover, once you reach the 2,500 mark, savings in your account, you can now invest this and use it to actually augment your retirement income. So it's actually one of the best plans that I've seen. Not only
do we need a little bit of education in regard of to make sure they understand how these HSA accounts work.
Yeah.
Because if they're able to, oftentimes I would think that if they're able to pay some of those medical costs out of their regular income and not touch the money in the HSA, that would be a lot better outcome for them in the long run.
Yes, but we do know, again, like you said, you know, it's an individual situation. Everybody is faced with their individual needs. And there are ways to help our employees fully maximize and utilize what we have. So, for example, you can set up payment plans, and the payment plans can be set up to directly be deducted from the HSA account. So you're there are ways to compensate. And we really do offer a lot.
Thank you. Any other questions by the board?
This is something that's also discussed with administrators. And it's really a good thing to talk with your staff about.
The last consensus that we need to is that we appreciate some support in educating our staff on how an HSA works, because it can be very intimidating to families that have never used it. It's a lot to learn. And we have one, and I don't think I would be confident in explaining to someone too much to convince them. I can't sell it. It's hard, but I'm a good sales person.
So I think that's just going to be important for us to think about. And I know Molly has a plan for that.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and just take it?
Yeah, so the vendor that we're using for our HSA account is called Health Equity. And they actually do have a lot of resources for each, you know, specific phase of the rollout, so to speak. So they have a co-branded webpage that they can set up just for us. It will have, you know, John Adams Academy, and it will have videos and just information and a lot of resources. They also have webinars, templates for marketing, quote unquote marketing material, templates for emails, and even what they call train-to-trainer courses. So we'll be coordinating with them to make sure that we have those resources available.
Right. Because you're right, the HSA, that's a non-taxable.
Contribution. The only thing in the tax code is triple tax benefit. Tax deductible in, tax free growth, and tax free out if it's used for health care.
Which eventually it would
help yeah, and down probably will. I'm using that term broadly. Have a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve the 26-27 health benefits plan.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
With you. Next is board initiated business. One thing I wanted to ask into this section, there are so many great things that were highlighted in the board packet about individual scholars that have got awards and different things. Do you put that in parent square so that other parents, as well as the recipient, what they have received? And I'm just asking, do we advertise that in parent square? Elementary, secondary? Yes, no. Let's. Okay.
A lot that happens in Times Square.
Yeah.
And
so maybe there's something. So I used to watch this principal at Granite Bay High School 25 years ago, and he was masterful. I mean, he'd call it Ron's Corner or something. I don't know what it was. But anyway, he would send out something separate, and parents would know, hey, this is when he's going to talk about some of the great things happening with some of the kids' scholarships they got to go to, you know, universities, the Americans or the daughters of the American Revolution, sons of the American Revolution, different, you know, awards they got. But that probably alone does a lot to advertise. And once again, to get new scholars, if they see all the great things, because there are so many good things happening, but like you said, maybe you don't have the time, but there may be someone on your campus and maybe a parent or some parents or part of the PSO to advertise that. That's a great way to really let people know all the good things that are happening. We don't do that. It's like, we're really missing the boat. Because that's why, you know, they sent their scholars here, right? They wanted to see them succeed. And when they see those success stories, it just kind of builds. It's a wonderful thing. So I mentioned that because I think something needs to be happening that way, because I was just incredibly inspired by all the kids this time of year. And it's this time of year when a lot of it's coming out, but it's, and I'm sure a lot of it just, I don't know about it, but absent that, I think we really do them a disservice and do ourselves a disservice in being able to invite them to our academy. That's
way to invite them in. Maybe there's a way to do that. Like I said, I'm trying to give you ideas, but then again, I'm sure parents can help take that off your plate. There's nobody prouder of a child than a parent. All right. Next meeting is due May 14th. That'll be 2 weeks before we're done for the year, right?
Graduation coming up.
So, motion to adjourn.
Come on, to adjourn.
I don't know. Okay, I'll put it.
Okay, thank you. All in favor?
All right.